Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
absolutely,
if we're uncomfortable
absolutely
talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Welcome to What's Next on Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, NPR. My name is Jay Moran. We're continuing our look at Women's History Month, and with us, two members of Erie County Government. We have the Deputy County Executive, Lisa Shimera. Lisa, good to have you back.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
And also back with us, Karen King. Karen, Executive Director of the Erie County Commission on the Status of Women and also the Commissioner of Public Advocacy. Karen, good to have you back.
Good to be back, Jay.
All right. So let's maybe just put some perspective here. We have two women who are high-ranking officials inside county government. That's the good news. What's the reality, though, for women as we are here toward the end of Women's History Month? Who wants to take that first? Maybe give us a thought
well,
on that.
Well, I think Women's History Month has evolved. I think it was a time and opportunity to think about women who have created a pathway for us. But I think in Erie County, it's also a time to celebrate women who are making a difference in our community. And I think it's also a time to engage young women in conversation about how they can create an impact in their community.
How about you for Karen?
Yes, I echo those sentiments. And but we're still looking at nowhere near gender parity in elected office. And this past Saturday, we had a Girl Civic Engagement program, which we host a few times a year, and invited elected officials and former elected officials, including our deputy county executive. And the one consistent theme was every single one of them was a first. Still.
Okay.
So what we're hoping to do with this work is get to a place where they're no longer the first. They're a person running for elected office, and they're not blazing a trail. We're grateful for the trailblazers, and there's plenty of women who are blazing a trail still in the arena of politics and public service. But we hope to get to a point where that isn't a thing anymore.
I'm interested from I want to try to get into these issues maybe and also try to reflect on both of your personal journeys to where you are right now, if you can share some things with us here in this conversation. And I was thinking about when Lisa mentioned, you know, how it was kind of appropriate to be at the History Museum to reflect on some of these people who've helped create a pathway for other women. How about for each of you personally? Do you have somebody who helped in your mind, maybe if not necessarily somebody who's a peer, but maybe somebody in history that, boy, this is a person who they found a way to get things done. They found a way to move forward in much more difficult situations that maybe inspired you to push to where you are now?
Well, first of all, I was a teacher for 34 years, and I had many teachers when I was a student who uplifted me, who challenged me, who encouraged me. I think that was really key. I also want to talk about my mother because I was a girl, three girls in my family, and both of my parents made sure that they challenged us. They made sure to let us know that we could do anything we wanted to do. And I thought that was very important, being raised in a family with three girls. So I also, I think about my time on the town of Tonawanda Town Board, where I was the only woman who served. And when I was running for the first time, I was the only woman running on a slate of all men. So it was important for me to talk to women who had been in that situation. And one of the women who actually we just received an award was Lynn Marinelli. Mm-hmm. And I had conversations with her on how do I do this? How do I navigate this as a woman? And there was really not many women to talk to at that point. So I think about how important that was. I also think about as a legislator, 11 legislators, only 3 women. And that's still the same today. And I think about how important it was to make sure I had relationships with other women on the legislature to make sure that we were uplifting, elevating issues that were directly affecting women. So at the time, Chair April Baskin and I worked collaboratively on many pieces of legislation that uplifted women.
How about you? For you, Karen, you must have some thoughts on that,
sure.
Your journey to this point.
Well, you know, I think for me, what was foundational, I was very fortunate to grow up in a home where politics and ideas were discussed at the dinner table. My mom was involved in Democratic politics during the turbulent 60s and early 70s. And so they set an example,
right,
my folks, about being engaged, being aware, and discussing ideas, and being encouraged to discuss them. And I think particularly for a young girl growing up at the time that I was growing up, using your voice wasn't always something that was promoted, right? So I grew up with this sense of course I'm going to use my voice.
Right.
Of course I'm going to fight for injustice. It's the way I was raised. So I was very fortunate, and I realized not everybody had those conversations growing up. So it was a natural progression for me. And then, of course, along the way, teachers always played a key role. You know, I can still name my elementary school teachers, my junior high, my high school teachers, my college professors, who were so key, you know, at that right moment of just giving me the guidance or the pivot that I needed, you know, for the next step. So I've always been engaged in, you know, feminist politics and advocacy. Never ran for elected office like my boss here. She takes a lot of
I'm
courage.
I'm not your boss. I'm your colleague.
Okay. Colleague. Muslim. And but which, you know, takes an incredible amount of courage, but always interested in the way that sexism and patriarchy frame our day-to-day lives.
That's a very strong way of describing that. And when Lisa, when you're talking about, you know, all of a sudden you're on the Tonawanda Town Board, the only woman, right? You're on the legislature, there's a couple more. But I mean, if we can also have a conversation here about those things that maybe are still happening. You know, you'd like to think that we're all on the same page. If you're an elected official, you have just as much power and just as much respect on given situations as others. But maybe that's not the case still. I'm wondering if there's still, I know we often have conversations about microaggressions, but do you still sense those elements where, well, you know, Lisa's the deputy county executive. I mean, that's a big, big position. But at the same time, I'm wondering if there's just those times where you get that sense where, oh, well, we don't necessarily want to hear from you because you're a woman. I'm wondering if you've experienced that anymore.
So, first of all, I do want to say the county executive has been very thoughtful about putting women into leadership roles, and I've appreciated that. I do think there are men who perhaps don't take you as seriously as they should. I don't think it's all men. I think I always have that mindset that I have to be well prepared. I have to work harder. I have to maybe speak a little bit louder to make sure I'm being heard. And I think that is something that when we have conversations with the young women that we bring in, we talk about the strategies we need to use when we're in those conversations on, and with in conversations where the majority of the people at the table are men.
Okay. Okay. So, Deb, it's still... There's still a sense that, that you are very, very much aware of it, whether it's overt or just the fact that, like you said, you're showing up to a meeting and 70% of the people there are men. I mean, is that fair?
Yeah. You know, listen, you walk into a room, you take the temperature in the room. You know, very few people are in a position where they can say what they want when they want. You know, we're all doing a degree of editing and understanding what the proper protocol and decorum is in terms of the setting. You know, the bottom line is, you know, we want to achieve certain things. And there are a number of hurdles that maybe you were expecting or maybe you weren't expecting, but that's the business of governing and politics. And I must, you know, echo what the deputy county executive just said about our county executive, Mark Poloncarz. He's been very supportive of every initiative that I've brought forth to him. He has supported wholeheartedly. And, you know, when you're trying to enact change, there's got to be buy-in at the top, especially in a government structure. And of course, the deputy county executive, incredibly supportive for all of the events that we host and has been a great voice for developing women's leadership. It's really important to have that buy-in at the top.
And I guess, you know, it's obviously you know, very appropriate that you mentioned the county executive and his role. But I guess, are you also suggesting... And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'll let you take it from here. The idea that organizations have to have that intentionality, right? The person on the top, whether it's a man or a woman, has to have that intentionality that there may not be an equal playing field here if the person at the top doesn't lead the way. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. And I, you know, we had conversations at the event this past Saturday, and we did not realize it at the time, but we were all firsts.
Right.
And I think about that, and I said to the young women who were at the event, I said, you know, when we talk about it, I don't ever want anyone to ever say, I voted for you because you were a woman. I want people to say, I voted for you because you were the most qualified candidate. And we always need to make sure that we get out that we are the most qualified candidate. Our background, our the experiences we've had, leadership teams we've been part of, change that we've helped create. And I think that is important. And I think that we always need to work hard to make sure everybody in the room understands that. Women need to have a place at the table and need to have a place in helping create those decisions that are making our community better.
Let's talk about the Saturday event then at the Buffalo History Museum. This is interesting because you had elected women talking with younger women.
High school students.
Yeah. There, that instead of me using the word girls, right? So younger high school
students. You can still say girls.
I guess I can still say girls. But yeah, I want to hear what, as you can understand it, you best appreciate it, what they were saying, what their viewpoint was. What did they bring to it that you saw that maybe it was a little different than perhaps maybe when you were in their shoes a couple of years ago?
Well, I think the one thing that really jumps out is they're far more comfortable airing their, using their voices, mm-hmm. and sharing their opinions. They're comfortable because they probably have had a lot more experience being in spaces that were not just exclusively male.
Right.
And they're coming of an age where communication and the way we communicate with each other is so vastly different than it was when we were teenagers. So they're comfortable and they ask really great questions, really direct questions about, you know, how do you decide what you're going to compromise on regarding a policy or a bill? You know, how do you know what the right thing is? You know, how do you deal with sexism? How do you deal with this acrimonious climate we find ourselves in right now? So they're really smart and really focused on the task at hand. What they need is more exposure to the mechanics and the tools and opportunity. And I've been saying this for years because of all these studies that have come out about, you know, girls and confidence. And my tagline is, girls don't have a confidence problem. They have an access to opportunity and resources problem. So you have to cultivate that early. So by the time they're done with high school, they're seriously thinking, yeah, I could run for elected office. Yeah, I could run for governor. I could run for president. Sure.
And I know, Lisa, before we talked on the air, you mentioned how a lot of what you'd focus on in these sessions with these younger women, not just running for office, but more importantly, the actual, you know, the day to day, the how, what it means to be that elected official, to be in that office and the responsibility that you have. What were some of the lessons that you shared?
Again, just an amazing group of young women who, it's important to paint a really clear picture. And we talk about running for office, but then we talk about the importance of governing. So now you're in office and you're responsible for making sure that you're representing the people who voted for you. And so we talk a lot about when you're in those positions of leadership, making sure that you're in the community, you're listening to community voice constantly, not just when you're running for office, but when you're in office. That's the most important time, because that's the opportunity you have to create meaningful change. So we talk a lot about how you make sure you're representing the people that voted for you, and how you take their voice and create meaningful legislation, policy change, or programs that are going to take care of perhaps needs in the community that they don't necessarily know about.
You said, listening to those people who elected you. And of course, when you're talking about that, you're also talking about your constituents who probably may not have voted for you.
Absolutely.
I'm curious about your experience there, how it perhaps steeled you, made you tougher, made you more sensitive. What about that as you're kind of climbing up through the Tonawanda Town Board and then into the Erie County Legislature? What were some of the things that you developed? Because you, like you said, you want to keep that ear open, but yet sometimes what you hear may not always be all that pleasant.
Well, you know, one of the things that I have learned so much from being a teacher for 34 years. I learned about what students need and what families need. And it drives what I do in my daily job. So one of the things that I was most concerned about when I was in a position to make some changes was mental health. And from a student perspective, one of the things that I helped move forward was Erie Path. And it's an app for mental health. It's for students, for family members, for teachers. And again, it was engaging all of those people in conversations about what they needed, what they felt was missing, what information did they need, and how quickly did they need it, and what was the best way to make sure they had access to it. So Erie Path was one thing. Another thing was the Crisis to Care Collaborative, and that was individuals in a mental health crisis, and how do you get that from the time a call comes in to who's going to respond and how are they going to respond and then where are they going to go? So again, that was built through massive community conversation and through conversation of law enforcement, providers, and people who and where they were going, the places they were going, you know, the hospitals and the intake facilities that were providing these kinds of supports. So again, I think that that collective impact model where you gain input from many individuals, you're working in the same direction, you have that same common goal, is so critically important.
I'm glad you brought up mental health. That's something that, of course, is an issue community-wide, but what about from a women's point of view? Are there issues that are unique, or are the pressures of day-to-day society the same, and we see maybe similar interactions, whether it's a man or a woman. What are your thoughts there? Again, I guess as the executive director and the commission on the status of women, maybe I'm asking you to step outside your purview here a little bit, but what maybe would you know, Karen, maybe if not from a statistic standpoint, but maybe from an anecdotal standpoint?
Well, you know, I look at systems and the way that women are impacted by the way systems are created. And certainly mental health and wellness is an issue. And does it land differently for women than men? I think it depends on many variables.
Okay.
But if we look at the way mental health issues have been framed historically, and I mean, if you want to go back to the turn of the century and before, and, you know, women in madness and the whole legacy of how women were supposed to behave and what happened when they didn't is eye-opening. We have come so far from that. And now the discussion of mental health wellness is, you know, part of our vernacular. We still need to do a lot of work around it. And interestingly enough, the case study that the students worked on Saturday was about launching a mental health wellness program for high school students.
Okay.
So this is an issue that's very close to them, and they're impacted directly, you know, for many reasons. But, you know, I'm always looking at history and context. So if you're a student of history and you want to go back to, you know, the ways that women were institutionalized because they were, quote, mad versus having a voice is a really interesting perspective to not lose sight of. So we've come a great distance. We still have a long way to go.
But do you see remnants of that still today? That idea that, you know, like you said, you know, institutionalized because they're quote unquote mad. I mean, do we see perhaps, you know, we heard Lisa say earlier how sometimes you have to be a little louder in these sessions and these spaces.
Well, I will say this. I think most of the women I know, particularly those in leadership roles, are very cognizant of how to appear publicly and very mindful of how we articulate what we're trying to do. We know that. And it's not so much as a script, but we're aware of what the rules are. And sometimes we have a little more latitude to push those boundaries, and we do try to do that. But we're also always aware of, you know, in the moment, you know, if I say this, what will the fallout be? Or what will the long-term or short-term ramification be? You know, do I want to say this right now? Do I want to take on this battle right now in this moment? Or do I want to wait? Right? We're all making these calculations in the moment.
Sure. And I'll just follow up with this and not necessarily asking for you on a personal level, but to me, that sounds like a lot of pressure. Have you found colleagues, former colleagues, who after a while, the pressure of living that type of reality just gets a little too difficult, or is it, or do you just feel like, maybe most of the people that you know just have been able to overcome?
Well, you know, the thing I've learned about county government is it's such an important component of our daily lives. And when you go through catastrophic events, what happened in May at Tops, and the brutality of it, COVID, weather events, you realize the role that county government plays in so many parts of our lives. And is it perfect? No. But it is such an important component of how we get through our lives. And the people that do the work, like our deputy county executive and our county executive and the thousands of people, particularly in the Department of Social Services that are doing this work daily, it's really quite something, and it's really important. And that's another reason why I really want the students that participate in our civic engagement program to understand the significance of county government. It's not perfect. There are always going to be challenges, but it's so important as a resource in our daily lives.
And I think one of the questions that students always ask, how do you balance everything? How do you balance your life, your family, your job? You know, that is particularly challenging for women. And the advice I always give them is make sure you surround yourself with people that support your work and you as a person. And we talk a lot about that because they're already feeling the challenges of being a woman and you know what they see ahead of them perhaps. And surrounding yourself with other women who can support you, you know, in your work environment. I am very fortunate to have women in the county who I rely on to talk about perhaps how I'm feeling and challenges I'm facing. And it's important that you do that. And that is not a sign of weakness. That is a sign of strength. And that is making sure you're taking care of yourself. Because in order to do the work and to do the work well, you need to make sure you're taking care of yourself first.
Let's take a time out and we'll come back with more. We're talking about Women's History Month, and with us two perfect guests, as a matter of fact, to talk about that. We have the Deputy County Executive, Lisa Shimera, with us, and also Karen King, Executive Director of the Erie County Commission on the Status of Women and also Commissioner of Public Advocacy here in Erie County. Take a time out. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR, brings you trusted local journalism every day. Our reporters are in your communities covering the stories that shape Western New York and Southern Ontario. The issues, people, and decisions that matter. Add national perspective from the BBC and here and now, and you're connected to the larger world without losing sight of home. Stay informed with reporting that you can trust on BTPM NPR.
An easy way to give to the station that has given you so much over the years is by naming Buffalo Toronto Public Media as a beneficiary on an existing or new life insurance policy. For more information, contact me, Lisa LaTravato, at 716-845-7031.
Calling all storytellers in kindergarten through third grade. The Buffalo Toronto Public Media PBS Kids Writers Contest is back. Here are the details for parents, caregivers, and educators. Kid writers from Western New York and Southern Ontario can send us their stories until March 31st for a chance to win prizes and be featured in a celebration live streamed from our studios. Don't wait. Visit btpm.org/writerscontest to submit your entry today.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next. Today, we are talking about Women's History Month. With us from the Erie County Commission on the Status of Women, their deputy, their executive director, I should say, Karen King, Deputy County Executive Lisa Shimera with us here for a few more moments as well. I understand you have to go off to a meeting with the mayor here in just a little bit. So
yes, I do.
I guess that's part. So maybe just a moment then to talk about that. You're from the executive branch, the highest ranking woman in Erie County. What about that? What are some of your duties and responsibilities on a day in and day out basis? Besides going to see the mayor today?
Well, first of all, I just want to talk briefly about the reason that I have this meeting with the mayor. I talked a little bit about this Crisis to Care Collaborative, right. And one of the things that we heard from all of the providers throughout Erie County is they wanted to hear that leadership had buy-in on this movement to create some meaningful solutions. And one of the things they said is, you know, we want to see leaders at the table saying they support this work. So in order to do this, I was part of it from the very beginning from Erie County, and the mayor, the sheriff, president of ECMC, commissioner of Central Police Services, our commissioner for mental health. So when you see these individuals at the table saying, I support this work and I'm part of these solutions, it's incredibly powerful. So I have appreciated the mayor taking time to be brought up to speed on what has happened. And we have consultants that are kind of guiding this work. So Mayor Ryan is kind of bringing together that leadership team at City Hall today to have these discussions. So that's why I'm leaving today, but it is incredibly important, incredibly meaningful, and of course, incredibly challenging getting all of these individuals sure. together at the same time.
Yeah, that's gotta be just a big part of what you do on a basis is trying to always kind of, you know, build these coalitions, keep them in touch.
I think that I am incredibly proud of the work that I do with different organizations throughout our community. And we have our Live Well Erie initiative, which is extremely powerful. We have our children's group, our working families group, and our older adults group. And it is government and individuals, community partnerships throughout Erie County who come together to solve issues in our community. They have very specific goals. They have working groups who are tackling day-to-day issues, and I am extremely proud of that work. I think when you talk about my job is listening. I need to be listening to community groups, to residents, to other municipalities, and bringing people together to do the work, quite frankly.
What about life in Erie County government right now? How is it for women in Erie County government? There's one that the tee up, and I'll let you run with it.
Well, I'm going to tell you that, again, the county executive, Mark Poloncarz, has always hired the most qualified candidate. And those qualified candidates have been women. So we have in our Office of Mental Health, Sarah Bonk, who's a new commissioner. We have Commissioner of Department of Social Services, Karen Rabicki, who is doing a tremendous job. We have key individuals in Karen Hoke, who, again, very non-traditional job, you know, working with highway departments throughout Erie County, doing outstanding work. So I think for women, I think they feel supported. I think they feel valued. I make sure one of the things I learned when I was an educator is recognizing great work and taking the time each day to recognize that great work. So I oftentimes send messages of gratitude on the work that's being completed each and every day. And so I am proud of the women who are in Erie County government. Of course, I'm missing many.
Sure.
But they are doing tremendous work. And again, feel supported by our county executive and of course, feel supported by me.
And am I correct that Maria White was a member of the county administration and is now with city administration, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I had the great honor of working with Maria. I actually worked with her at the Community Foundation's the Racial Equity Roundtable. And we have worked on many initiatives together when she was part of the Community Foundation. She also was somebody who guided me in accepting this role. Hmm. I was retired. I was a legislator. And I wanted to know, you know, what was her experience and what was her advice? And we actually we're collaborating on projects right now okay. in her role at the city and my role at the county. And what's wonderful is I think there's such great opportunity right now for deep, meaningful collaboration between the city and the county. And I think those relationships that I have, that the county executive has, that things are going to happen because of that collaboration on a day-to-day basis.
What advice did Maria White give you? I mean, because in a way you followed her path, right? She was an elected legislator and then went into county administration. What about
that? I did. Listen.
Hmm.
listen a lot. Make sure you understand that the commissioners, department heads, are the experts. You know, they're the experts, and make sure you meet regularly to understand what's happening, you know, in each of the departments. County government is huge. And I think it's important to have a pulse on everything that's happening throughout county government and everything that's happening in municipalities across Erie County. So she also is somebody who I have called during challenges that I was facing, sometimes feelings that I was having, and I have appreciated her.
Well, we don't want to keep you from getting over to City Hall. It's not a long walk, but I know you have to be there. So we're going to take a time out, but we want to thank you for being with us from this section of What's Next. Deputy County Executive Lisa Shamara, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we're going to continue our conversation after this break. Back with us, it'll be Karen King, Executive Director of the Erie County Commission on the Status of Women, as we continued our discussion on Women's History Month. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Public media starts here, in our neighborhoods, our schools, our city halls, where decisions meet real life. BTPM NPR's local reporters are asking the questions that matter, listening to the people affected, and explaining what it all means for our region.
There's a lot of poor record keeping. There are records that list that don't reconcile with other lists. There's a lot of gasoline that's being used that isn't properly accounted for. And there are a lot of people with take-home vehicles.
That's Erie County Comptroller Kevin Hardwick. He's outlining just a few of the issues his office found when conducting an audit of the county's vehicle fleet.
From paper trails to public impact, this is journalism that stays with the story and with the community it serves. Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR, produces journalism with depth, care, and purpose. This is Public Media.
At Buffalo Toronto Public Media, we're committed to serving our entire community. Whether you're listening to investigative journalism on BTPM NPR, enjoying world-class performances on BTPM Classical, discovering new local artists on BTPM The Bridge, or immersing yourself in mysteries on BTPM PBS, public media has something for everyone. Explore programs that matter to you at btpm.org. This is Public Media.
From the fringes of the mainstream to the local music you love. Listen to Buffalo Toronto Public Media at The Bridge Monday through Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight on BTPM NPR at 88.7 or from your smart speaker.
From Morning Edition to Marketplace, Buffalo Toronto Public Media NPR brings you news you can rely on. Local, national, and global. Stay informed with BTPM NPR and take it with you on the BTPM Listen app.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next. My name is Jay Moran, and with us for the remainder of our program on Women's History Month, the Executive Director of the Erie County Commission on the Status of Women, and also the Commissioner for Public Advocacy here in Erie County, Karen King. Thanks for taking this on by yourself. I appreciate it. I know you can handle it.
Always a pleasure.
All right, so We got into some different aspects here with the Deputy County Executive, most certainly appreciative of her time. But you know, at the end of the day, though, this is your commission. This is, you know, what you're trying to you've got to take this by the horns, so to speak, and carry things forward. What about the commission itself? Where does it stand today?
Well, I'm proud of the work we're doing. One of the central core missions is to elevate the voices of women. The department is not a service provider, for example, like the Department of Social Services.
Right.
Our main function is to serve as an educator, a collaborator, a convener with within county government, within other departments, as well as the larger community. So the program that we just hosted last Saturday with the Girls Civic Engagement Program is an example of convening community leaders. There are teachers there from several high schools. We had elected officials. And the importance of creating a space where these conversations can take place and where people can have access to their elected officials. This is a really special and unusual circumstance where students have direct access to elected officials to ask them a wide variety of questions and to build that relationship and to know, oh, now I know who my, you know, April Baskin, she's our New York State Senator, Karen McMahon, oh, she's our assembly member, you know, Deputy County Executive Shamira, Leah Hilton Pulp, she's in the city. So these are people that they can identify with and have access to. And every single one of the electeds is so extending and encouraging. So creating opportunities, I like to say, where women's voices are raised and centered.
It sounded like a great event, and I'm really kind of curious from your perspective. We got into this a little bit earlier, talking about somebody along the pathway for you, so about the journey. And you mentioned teachers, you mentioned your mother, your family. I'm wondering though if you can maybe use a little empathy here. When you heard some of these questions from these young women, these young students talking to their elected officials the other day, do you feel like the conversation is different now than it may have been or would have been when you were their age? Or were the questions the same?
No, without question, they're different.
Yeah.
They're much more complicated. They're much more sophisticated. There's much more of an awareness of the role of government.
Okay.
Yeah, really impressed with the questions and also the importance of framing the conversation. So when the electeds were talking about being the first, and every single one of them had an example of being the first, we talked about the way politics is no longer business as usual. I mean, it is still in many ways, but with more women getting involved in elected office and going through that process, the metrics of how do you get to that space have changed dramatically. I'm not sharing anything that hasn't been said before, but you know, for the most part, it was an old boys network.
Absolutely.
And certainly at the more senior levels, you know, where'd you go to school? You know, who's your father? You know, who do you know, right? And it was a clubby, if you will. And that metric has changed dramatically with more women getting into the field. And that's an important shift. And we really wanted to highlight that with the students, saying that that shift in how you get there and then how you're supported and what matters has changed. And you were mentioning Maria White. And of course, I worked with Maria for several years too at the county very closely on several initiatives. And she is a big proponent of espousing the proximity to an issue or the proximity to a problem. The people who have the closest proximity to an issue or a problem are the best suited to be involved in the conversation of how that problem is solved or how that problem is addressed. Mm-hmm. And then when you talk about women and proximity to issues, all issues impact women. But of course, there are issues that that jump out, like childcare.
Right.
And the availability of it, or reproductive health. We have lived experience, and we are probably the most informed to share what those day-to-day experiences are like. So those voices need to be centered in these conversations around policies and laws.
So, and I know this is, if I'm kind of flashing back to some of our previous conversations with you, it's a priority for you to reach out to younger people, younger women, so they can be those people that are going to be filling those spaces. And just to take that another step, I mean, is it simple enough to just say until we have bodies of government that reflect the real population, you know, more than there, but we could say 50-50, but it's actually a little bit more women than men, right, in terms of the real population, that until we have that, we're not really going to have total equality?
Well, representation matters.
Right.
And it just matters. So for 40 or 50 high school girls to gather on a Saturday morning and see seven or eight highly successful women who are in elected office making changes is an important thing for them to witness and experience. Representation matters.
Sure.
In terms of equity and access, you know, all women don't think the same. We may have a shared history or share common experiences around childcare or childbirth or the wage gap, but we don't all think the same. You know, we're not a homogeneous group. And I think what's important is, sure, gender parity matters. We want women at the table, but we also want women who are informed about the process and what it means to be involved in public life and run for elected office, but also what does it mean, particularly at this moment, to engage in civil, complicated discourse about, you know, what direction we need to go in with a myriad of issues impacting all of us, not just exclusively women. And, you know, one of the things that we hear from the students is, oh, God, politics, it's just so awful, and people are just so awful. And yes, the civility of engaging in discourse, particularly when you're talking with colleagues or other elected officials about ideological differences, you know, giving them the tools to say, no, it can be done this way. It doesn't have to be this acrimonious sideshow, if you will.
Sure.
It can be civil. And it can be impactful and it can be meaningful. So the idea of engaging in the process of listening to the people that have proximity, the most proximity to the issue, understanding what's involved in government, understanding that there has to be a give and take and a negotiation and compromise, and doing it in a civil way because we're all invested in the success for our community.
The question I always seem to fall back on here in this program is asking about hope. So I'm wondering about these young women that were there on Saturday. And like you said, there was the initial thought that, oh, my gosh, politics. This is, I thought you said, an acrimonious sideshow. I might write that one down and keep it in front of me hopefully not for the rest of my days. But was there hope inside there, though, that A, this is going to change, and B, that we can be part of the change?
Well, there has to be, Jay. We have to have hope. You know, if we don't have hope, what do we have? You know, we have to get
an acrimonious sideshow.
Now we have to get up every morning and put one foot in front of the other and roll up our sleeves and do the work. And like I said, it's an imperfect system, but it's what we have to work with, and it can be better. And, you know, I like to see this as the work we're doing with the girls is building a bench. You know, we're building a bench of qualified, competent candidates or who we hope will be candidates, either in elected office or public service, that are prepared to enter into this field to do the work.
So we're coming down to our, about 5+ minutes ago here. I mean, I've kind of taken this conversation in a lot of different ways today, and mainly because of the dynamic that we had. We had the deputy county executive here for a little bit, but now we've got you here, and I know you've got a lot on your mind. So I want to hear, as we are reflecting on Women's History Month, what is on your mind, Karen King?
Now is not the time for retrenchment. There have been attempts to roll back the successes and the achievements of equity for women, and now we're seeing a retrenchment and a assault on those important milestones. We have come a long way, don't get me wrong.
Right.
We've made great strides, and I work with incredibly talented and dedicated women in leadership roles every day. I am hopeful, but we can't shy away from this work. We can't shy away from the value of diversity, equity, and inclusion. We can't shy away from the importance of leadership development for women of color, for Black women, for women who've been marginalized, because there are things happening right now that, I mean, under siege is just the best way I can say it. That's what we're dealing with. We'll continue to fight. We will not go backwards. I mean, there's no way we can go backwards, right? The laws of physics, right? We got to move forward. And this next generation of women will have a lot of work to do, but we're going to prepare them, and we're going to support them and encourage them and mentor them, and you know, we'll get there.
What on the national level then is getting your attention and maybe has your greatest concern right now?
Well, of course, March 26th marks All Women's Equal Pay Day, and it's frustrating to know that the gender wage gap persists in spite of the incredible achievements women have made in every field. Earlier, the deputy county executive was talking about women in the trades, which is really important because that's a profession, of course, that's been male dominated, but it's one of the professions that offers really great wages and benefits, and for in many cases, collective bargaining agreements, which also are really helpful in terms of a social safety net that women need, you know, particularly if you're a woman raising children on your own. So that's a good sign, but we need to be pushing not just government and laws, but of course, legislation is key. There's a pay transparency updated act that is in the state assembly and Senate right now that's being tweaked that will give the current legislation more teeth, which is important. But employers play a role in terms of narrowing the wage gap and being transparent about the benefits they offer. So we all have to work together collectively to address this because there's not going to be one thing that solves this problem or eradicates gender wage disparities. It's going to be a collective effort. So that is something that I continue to work on. Of course, intimate partner violence, domestic violence is still an issue. And, you know, we grapple with that in its many forms, and we try to address that. The program that we run in February for high school students is the Teen Dating Violence Awareness Summit, which gives students an opportunity to learn about what are healthy relationship dynamics and what resources are available in the community to address that. So we make an effort to create learning opportunities and spaces for these conversations to happen, and we keep working on the issues.
Well, then you almost took my final question out of my mouth. So what is next then for the Commission on the Status of Women?
Well, we were talking earlier about mental health and wellness. We'll be doing a series of programs, roundtable discussions later on this year, starting in late spring and wrapping up towards the end of the calendar year, that focus on the challenges that women face, particularly this idea of a burnout and balancing family life and the responsibilities of caretaking and success at work. What does that look like and how are women navigating that? We know a lot of women. I mean, I can tell you, every single woman I know, you know, one of the first things she says to me is, I'm so tired. I'm so tired.
I think I hear that in my household.
And there's a reason why we're tired.
I think I understand those reasons.
We're always working and vigilant about these issues. But so we'll be hosting a series of conversations from women in the workplace, HR executives, people who are employed, what they're looking for in terms of how do we better support the advancement of women in these spaces, and how do we recognize that when they leave their workday, they have a whole other shift, right? The
right.
Second shift, we used to call it, in terms of caretaking responsibilities that are there's a lot for us to do, and I say that's why we're tired, because we're never really not working. We're either working inside the home or outside the home in our places of employment. So we're going to talk about how organizations are structured to either hinder that or support it, and how they can be restructured to be more supportive with the understanding of, you know, one example was, how do you measure merit?
Mm.
You know, through what lens do we recognize merit, and how are women penalized with those metrics?
Oh my goodness, you just opened up a whole new, we don't have time for that.
We'll come back in the fall and we'll talk about that program. I'd be happy to do that.
Very good. Well, I think that will wrap us up for this program. Anybody wants more information, you have a website, obviously, people can go to, right?
That's right, at Erie.gov, and then you go to the website and you'll find the Commission on the Status of Women, which is a tab, and you'll go to our website and you'll find a whole wealth of information.
And it's all... of course, led by the executive director, and that is Karen King, our guest today on What's Next. I want to thank you for being with us, and hopefully we'll have more conversations moving forward here as well. I also want to thank Deputy County Executive Lisa Shimera, was with us for the first part of our program as well. But Karen, thanks for being with us on What's Next.
Thank you, Jay.
This has been What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.